This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This show is brought to you by our show sponsor, BetterHelp Online Therapy. We try our hardest to take care of our bodies and constantly follow fitness trends. But what about our minds? Without a healthy mind, being truly happy and at peace is hard. The good news is therapy works. There's a misunderstanding of what therapy is. It can be whatever you want it to be. For me, it's a safe space where I can untangle my mixed feelings and talk through my emotions and ultimately be able to go about my day with a stronger and clearer mind. When everyone is struggling with something, there's no more shame. BetterHelp is a customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people who are seeing what therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself because you are your greatest asset. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and 21 and over listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/holly. That's BetterHelp.com/holly. Hello, I'm Holly Ramsey. Honestly, I'm probably best known as Gordon and Tana's daughter or one of the bunch. Now, I'm hoping to become known for being me, for being honest, for being real and a lot more relatable than you might think.
Hi, I'm Tally. I'm a psychotherapist. I've had my own mental health battles from the age of about 14 until 22 when I went into treatment. Now I'm nearly 7 years clean and a therapist hoping to give back a bit.
21 and Over explores mental health, family dynamics, creating your own identity and what it means to be a 20-something in today's world by sharing our own experiences and struggles with some amazing guests. My co-host Tally and I not aim to only normalise our many mishaps, failures and setbacks of being a 20-something, but also celebrate the growth that they bring. It's time for our weekly check-in. Each episode, myself and Tally will do a check-in. Especially when I'm at therapy or even just speaking to a friend, it usually starts with, "Hey Holly, how are you today?" To which I respond, "I'm great, doing super well, everything is good, everything is great." Bullshit. It then takes me about 30 seconds of awkward silence, and then I actually open up and let my guard down. I'm going to work on not doing that, so now at the start, we will check in.
So I guess I'm going to ask you, Holly, how your week's been. What is a highlight and perhaps a low point of your week?
I would say that the highlight of my week has been that my puppy Truffle didn't wake up at 7 this morning like he has been recently. And then my low would be I did a Zara order this week, and about 70% of the clothes did not fit, which didn't make me feel great. I was definitely angry at myself for that extra piece of garlic bread. And the order was actually meant for a new pair of jeans. And it wasn't until it arrived that I realized I didn't even order one pair of jeans. What would you say were the highlights and lows of your week?
So I guess the highs for me this week were, making a new pasta bake recipe and perhaps having a lion. And the low I'd say was the anxiety around the end of the lockdown, the potential end of the lockdown soon. We've had to be so used to sort of keeping ourselves to ourselves and not interacting with others. And the thought of having to now interact and be social is filling me with anxiety and a bit of dread because it's a big change.
I'm very much with you on that. I'm not looking forward to having to make up an excuse to cancel plans.
I know. Well, we've all got so used to a new way of life and now it's going to have to change again. So I don't think I'm alone in the fact that, you know, the anxiety around this big shift, basically.
Definitely not.
So this being the first episode, Holly, I'm sure that the listeners and I would like to know a little bit more about your journey, your mental health journey. What has got you here and what has perhaps inspired the podcast?
I think people think they know a lot more about me than they actually do. Growing up in the public eye, I guess I've always portrayed a different image mm-hmm. than what was actually going on. And now I'm ready to speak more about my mental health journey and just show the real me rather than what I think people would like to see.
Was there a pivotal moment that you decided that you'd like to share that with the world?
I would say probably about 6 months ago, I realized, even on my social media, I wasn't being that real. I was definitely posting what I thought people wanted to see. Mm. And I have continued to do so, but a bit more, trying to be a bit more realistic as I can. But it's hard trying to find the balance of still sticking to what I think people want to see and posting what I want to post.
Yeah, it's frightening being vulnerable, and it's frightening showing sides of you that perhaps you haven't shown.
Definitely. And I think in a weird way, I've got to mourn the loss of the kind of perfect image that has been created, that I've tried to create.
Absolutely.
On social media.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about when the journey started, when your mental health journey began.
I would say that my mental health journey probably began when I was in secondary school. I remember having prolonged feelings of being quite sad and feeling just generally quite empty, as if I was just going through day by day and not feeling much joy. But I was just a teenager, so I thought that this was completely normal. The idea of depression was quite a taboo. No one really spoke about it at all.
What age were you?
This was definitely started at 13, but then it went away and then came back when I was 15 or 16. So it was very confusing having these feelings and then not having them and then them coming back. So it didn't feel normal, but right. I thought it was normal.
Sure. And I wonder what the fear was perhaps of expressing this to someone, you know, to someone close to you. I wonder what was perhaps holding you back from expressing your feelings.
I think the fact that it kept going away. So I thought this is going to continue. And I was also very confused as to why I had these feelings, because I'm very fortunate. I've got an amazing family. Great siblings who I get on with and love and adore. My parents, my relationship with them is great. So I felt very guilty feeling like this.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, that when we have these feelings of sadness or these feelings of you know, bouts of depression, if everything externally looks good, we presume that we are not allowed to feel these, you know, these kinds of feelings. So it's very conflicting, especially if they go away, especially if they come and go, as you were saying.
Definitely. Well, they would always come and go. And it was very strange. And it was almost like I was predicting when the next one would come. But I've definitely always struggled with anxiety. I was probably born with it. I mean, I remember being very young and wanting to do a ballet recital or just feeling very intense nerves, but I did it anyway. But I never knew that it was
anxiety. Yeah. Yeah.
I just thought I was shy compared to my siblings.
Okay.
And I also found, I remember being in school and everyone older than me constantly telling me how they had the time of their lives in school, they enjoyed it, and not to stress on a math test because no one's going to ask what you got when you go for a job interview. And I didn't really enjoy school much because I was creative. I have always been into fashion, always been into art. I was not academic at all. Compared to my twin, he was very clever and he worked very hard for it. So I was laughed at by my peers for not being academic because I was in the lowest set. It was quite funny because I was one of the only students who was in the lowest set for everything.
Yeah.
So that became quite comical.
Right.
So I kind of just laughed it off as well and didn't really think of it. But I was definitely referred to as the creative student or the creative sibling. At first I hated that, but now it's such a blessing.
It's hard when we get given these labels as well at a young age because, you know, or our experience is sort of slightly minimized, right? You were enjoying being creative and it was seen as something that was perhaps wrong. You know, you weren't in any of the top sets and that's minimizing your kind of experience in a way.
Yeah, I've always kind of struggled with that bit of finding that identity. I knew I always wanted to go into fashion, but it didn't feel like I could do fashion as a subject. The school I was at the time didn't even offer textiles as an A-level, but they offered art, but you could specialize in fashion. So it was confusing.
Yeah. So then from the ages, so that was from your sort of early teenagers going up to, you know, late teens. And then what happened in your sort of, in your journey?
So then I still had all the mixed feelings, but I just kept them to the side. Sometimes they would take over everything else, but I was pretty good at hiding them and managing them because they were still so confusing to me. I then moved on to university where I studied fashion design. It was a very intense course, but I knew that because I love fashion. My first internship, I did a 15-hour day and I came home and dad was like, "What are you doing? You're crazy. You can't work like that." And he was saying that he hadn't worked like that since he was training in Paris. And I was like, "Dad, this is what I love doing." The thrill of seeing a couture garment come together was genuinely like nothing else. So I went to university, studied fashion design, and I loved it. It was a very intense course. But by the second half of the first year, I was being affected by my PTSD and I had no idea that this was happening. I was going out a lot. I was missing class because I'd been out. I was going clubbing way too much. I wasn't enjoying myself at all. I was struggling a lot more, but didn't notice because I would just think that it was just a hangover or just a lot of work.
Sounds to me like you were trying to block out feelings, all those ways of distraction and numbing self.
Definitely. I mean, when I would study, I would channel anything I was feeling into my work, and then I would go out and kind of just release it. So I didn't have any time to actually think about what was going on. I then left university after my first year because I was admitted to the Nightingale Hospital as an inpatient for 3 months.
So just quickly for our listeners outside of the UK, what is the Nightingale Hospital?
The Nightingale Hospital is a psychiatric hospital in London. And that was where I was diagnosed with PTSD, anxiety, and depression. And since then, I have been in therapy up to 3 times a week. I now have these diagnoses that I carry around with me. And it's confusing, and I'm trying to channel that and take control of my narrative and use that to make something good.
I wonder if it was a relief to be given these diagnoses because, you know, as you said, it was very confusing for a long period of time and you didn't understand where these feelings were coming from and perhaps what they were, what they meant. And finally having someone, you know, sort of tell you what they were in a way.
Definitely. It was like a huge weight was taken off and almost kind of something that I could explain why I was acting like that. I mean, when I was going out lots, when I was in school, no one understood. I didn't understand why I was going out, but I was still doing it. And now I can see it's because my PTSD was bad and I was really struggling.
Yeah.
Or if I was having a low period within my depression, then I can now see why. Mm. It makes more sense.
And you mentioned your PTSD, and I wondered if you'd feel comfortable sharing what that PTSD was as a result of.
That was a result of 2 sexual assaults when I was 18.
Okay. And you never told anyone about these experiences?
Not until a year afterwards.
That sounds heavy. You kept that all to yourself for a long time.
I did. I just buried it in a box in the back of my mind and just tried to get on with everything as best I could.
Until it got too much?
Yeah.
Mm. So after you had, you said you went into treatment, you were diagnosed with PTSD, anxiety and depression. How have you, you know, continued life? Because, you know, I know going into treatment, well, I've done it many times, and I know what it can be like then to come out once you've had a prolonged period of time, not in life. You know, you sort of take a step out of life for a second, you go and you look at yourself under a microscope, and it's quite daunting, it's scary. So I wonder how, after that, you know, you're about in treatment, what it's been like for you, how you've been able to manage, to be able to manage your anxiety, how you've managed your depression and your PTSD.
Honestly, it's definitely a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
I think something that's so special to me about 21 and over is that it's very much a journey. I'm not saying that I'm cured, everything is in a box in the corner. It's going to be a journey. There are still going to be bad days. There are still going to be great times and good days, but I'm just going to deal with them as they come. I guess more to answer your question is my family has been an amazing support.
Mm.
Having 3 siblings and now an extra one has been great. It's brought me closer to them in many ways, and the same with my parents.
I guess the thing is it's a real example of what happens when we get vulnerable and when we tell our truth. And even though it's very scary to do because of the fear of not being heard, not being seen, when we finally get to that stage where we feel we don't have no other choice but to be vulnerable, and to be seen and accepted for that is such a relief. And it's a great example that when we are vulnerable and when we are authentic, it gives others permission to do the same.
Definitely. And I think, again, as I was growing up, I remember people telling me in my 20s, I had the time of my life, I could be an adult, but not having to do all the adult things. Well, for me, it's so different. I have 3 diagnoses and I've been hospitalized. So I'm just trying to navigate a different path that isn't spoken about at all.
Mm.
Not many people I know have dropped out of university. Not many people didn't do that well in school compared to their siblings. So it's very much a journey, and it's kind of navigating your own way through it.
Mm. It's frightening though, because we never know how we're going to be received by others. And I can certainly relate to that. Coming, you know, back out of treatment, and everyone has continued with their lives as if nothing's happened. Yet our world, or your, you know, the world that we knew has suddenly changed so drastically because we've had intense therapy. Mm. We've had intense, you know, looking at our lives and the responsibility we need to take for our lives, you know, all these things that perhaps you wouldn't ever have thought about before. So I think it's really brave. And, you know, hopefully will inspire others to be able to share, you know, their truths.
I hope so. I mean, it's definitely come along with a whole new load of responsibilities.
Mm.
I mean, I've lost friends. So it's definitely a journey, but I hope by speaking out, it can help other people speak out or ask for help, and even just talk to their friends and just try and normalize the conversation around mental health.
It's not always what it seems on the outside.
Mm.
And I so relate to that because, you know, from my own experience, people saying, what? I didn't think that there was anything wrong with you. And, you know, you were saying, you know, you have a close relationship with your family and you've grown up in the public eye and everything has seemed to be great and normal. And actually somehow that can really exacerbate the pain because you think that you need to be a certain way.
Mm.
And if everyone else thinks this, then I must you know, I must conform to that. I must behave in a certain way. It's not always what it seems. And I think that's why, as you were talking about social media, we've got to be very careful about, you know, what people put on and actually what is really going on for them.
Important how you said that the world continues moving on whilst you are in treatment, because I remember when I came out of hospital, I went in during summer and came out in autumn. And even just the change in the trees for me was kind of, how is everything normal right now? I've just been away for 3 months, but everything has moved on, and it was quite a big shock. And it was just readjusting in the world that was still the same, but just looked different to me.
Well, everything does look different, not just literally, but sort of metaphorically. Mm. You've suddenly had everything change in terms of, well, the main question, I guess, for me was, well, what am I going to do now? You know, the fear of, well, I felt so safe in such a bubble for a prolonged period of time, and now I have to leave and I have to go back into a world which was really frightening before. And so that is, it's scary, and to need that continuous support is very important, right? And you were saying that, you know, you're still in therapy?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember coming out of hospital, and I had just left university. My friends had just started back at university. My twin was going to marine training. My older sister was in her new job, and my younger sister was still in school. So everyone had a plan.
Mm.
And I love having a plan, and I had such a plan. I knew what I was going to do. I was going to go to university, I was going to get an internship, I was going to work in the industry, and then I was going to have my own brand. It was so set in stone. And now there's a huge curveball. And it took me a while to try and figure out what to do.
I think that is such a good point in the lesson that plans change. I think the sort of society pressures of what do you want to do when you grow older? Sometimes what you want to do when you're 14, 15, 16 changes when you get to 20, 21 and things happen. And I think, again, this is a great example of actually sometimes we need to put our mental health first. You actually made a choice, Holly. You made a choice to put your mental health first. You didn't have to do that. You could have continued, you know, in a lot of pain. So it's also an example of it not mattering if things change, plans change all the time, and allowing ourselves to, not giving ourselves such a hard time if that happens.
Definitely. I mean, from such a young age, like you said, 13, 14, you have to choose what you want to study for your GCSEs. Mm. And then after that, it's what you want to do for A-level, so then you can prepare for university. And I was so angry when my plan got messed up. I was so angry. But now I can see it is a part of a bigger picture. But back then, I definitely couldn't see that.
Oh, it's so hard to see when you're in it and you have this really great plan. It's funny, I was in exactly the same situation. I was in fashion PR, and I thought that that's what I was going to do forever. And the idea then actually that was not meant for me, that wasn't right for me. My first internship was at Vogue in the fashion cupboard, and I thought that was it. That was me sorted. But, you know, when I the fear when I realized that it wasn't was daunting, because then what?
Mm.
Right, then who was I if I wasn't my great idea that I'd had for so many years? And that's what's scary.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness, or is preventing you from achieving your goals? Personally, when I have a lot on my mind, I'm unable to carry out simple tasks and focus on my work until I have a clearer mind. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. There is a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counsellor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly phone or video sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy.
BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free of charge to change counsellors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counselling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. Visit betterhelp.com/Holly. That's better, H-E-L-P. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counsellors in all 50 states. We have a special offer for 21 and over listeners. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Holly. That's 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Holly.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about your journey with mental health and a bit more about yourself?
As I said, my mental health journey started when I was about 14, 13, but quite similar to you, Holly. I had always been anxious. I'd always felt like I needed to be around people. I always felt something bad was going to happen. And when I was 14, I went to school. I went to a boarding school and I developed an eating disorder. And then, doctors involved and all that. And when I was 17, I went to my first treatment center. It was more like a hospital. It was in Windsor, and it was a very unpleasant experience because I didn't think that I had a problem. I went into treatment when I was 17. That was more for the mental health stuff. I had been self-harming. My food was still not right, but I was definitely depressed. Mm-hmm. Everyone that I was surrounded by, my friends, like my 17-year-old friends, all seemed to be having such a great time.
Oh.
But I felt so different. I felt so different. And I felt like I always needed to prove something to them. I felt I was always trying to fit in, and it was very unnatural. I think when I went into treatment at 17, it was a relief, even though it wasn't, I really didn't enjoy it because I didn't think that there was anything wrong. But I left there, and actually what was really happening underneath was that I had quite a severe addiction to alcohol. That started quite late. It started when I was, in comparison to some other people. It started about 16, and I remember when I first drank, I was at this party, and it was this feeling that I could finally be myself. I finally didn't have to worry. And when I went into this treatment center at 17, they had kind of asked me what my relationship like was with alcohol, and I'd said it was fine. So when I was allowed out on home weekends, I would go out clubbing and I would get very drunk, and this continued for a while, and my addiction escalated into other substances. And I got to the stage when I was 22, where, as I said, I was in the sort of beginnings of my career, or what I thought was going to be my career, yeah, in PR and fashion. And I hit a rock bottom where I thought to myself, I can't continue like this. I don't want to live anymore, because it was so painful. The hard thing is still for me is that when I was told, but it was so unobvious, what do you mean? You had a problem with alcohol. What do you mean you were really struggling? The majority of my peers didn't really understand the severity of the pain I was in. And so I got to the stage where I either had to seek help or, it was the end. And I remember reaching out to an old therapist of mine who I'd come and gone from so many times, because I thought, I can't be asked to go and talk to you. And I was desperate. And actually it was a sort of gift of desperation, right? I was so desperate. I knew that it couldn't go on like this. And he said, okay, I will help you if you promise you're going to have to commit to not drinking for 14 weeks. And I thought, great. So I went into this treatment center, and I'd already planned 14 weeks afterwards, this massive party. I was like, great, 14 weeks easy. And it was about 2 weeks into this treatment that I realized that I had a problem with substances, but generally my nature was very addictive. And it's interesting because that was just a symptom of my underlying feelings, my depression, my anxiety. The way I feel things on such an intense level, right? When you were talking about feeling sad, but I get that on such a sort of intense level, whereby I think that You know when you're feeling a feeling and you think it's never going to end?
It takes over you.
It takes over. And I couldn't understand, you know, friends would go through similar experiences or friends would feel rejected, but it wouldn't have nearly the same impact as I would feel it. For me, it was like my world was coming to an end. And luckily, after sort of a few months in treatment, I realized that this was as a result of having this sort of, you know, being, you know, an addict or having an addiction. But actually, the substances, the behaviors, the eating disorder, which is all under the same bracket as of addiction, that is simply a way to change. It's using external things to change the way I feel internally. And I think then when I finally went into treatment, it took me a couple more times to really get stuck in. I then, you know, once I put the drink and drugs down, my eating disorder came back because it was just another way to try and control my feelings.
It's another addiction.
Exactly. It's another addiction. And I finally, I thought, okay, well, I put the drink and the drugs down, but suddenly all these feelings came up and I didn't know how to deal with it. So I then had to go to hospital and I went to South Africa for 4 months. That's when the sort of beginning of my life started, really, because I, as you were talking, you know, when you go away for that prolonged period of time, suddenly you come back and you've completely changed. But also I felt like I was raw. I'd been stripped back. Everything, I'd been exposed. And suddenly I had to start again. I started again and then I retrained. I started my training as a psychotherapist. And it's not to say that I was cured. I really want to stress that I came back from treatment and I was suddenly better. Because it's something, as you were saying, it's a process. I think back to being, you know, a young teenager, or, you know, even in my late teens and early 20s, I really didn't like myself, mainly because I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I liked. I didn't know what I didn't know what I should like. And you have all these sort of external pressures coming, you know, society or friends or family thinking, oh yeah, that would be great. That would be great. But I had never really taken the time, because of these sort of anxieties or these fears, to look at who I was, what did I like? You know, this classic example of people always saying to me, oh yeah, so what's your favorite color? And I'd say, no, what's your favorite color? Because I really had no idea.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, this is my mental health journey is an ongoing one. It's still something that I'm still in regular therapy. I'm in fellowships for my alcohol and drugs. And I, you know, I have to take it one step at a time. I still feel all these feelings, right? Mm-hmm. They don't just go away. But I guess it's given me the ability to talk about them more. And I've now, I think that I pride myself in being able to talk about feelings and not them not being taboo. I mean, I, as you were saying, Holly, I've lost loads of friends. My whole friendship group had to change because I went from being the fun one, the party one, to then being completely different and having a completely different outlook on life. I think that's the main thing. It's an ongoing journey and it will be forever, I think. And actually that is something that was very hard for me to accept, that it's not always going to be good. I'm not always going to feel happy. I am going to feel low. I am going to feel sad. I am going to feel all the feelings that humans feel. But I also have to let go of the control, because otherwise it's going to, you know, going to be a miserable existence.
Wow. I can relate to so many of the things you said. And for me, I find it amazing that you're now at the other side and you work at the rehab center.
Yes. So I work at the rehab center that I was in, the second one that I went to, I now work in. And that was a really big moment for me when I hit sort of 6 years clean, no, 5 years clean, and I started to work there. Because when I was there, you don't ever think that it's going to be okay. You know, when you're in that state of real pain and you never believe that things are going to change. So,
yeah, and you stripped back from everything. I mean, I remember when I went in, and whenever I would go out back home for the night, I was kind of like, I'm a different person. It's quite scary because no one really knows what it feels like unless you've been through that.
Absolutely. And also trying to explain to someone who doesn't, it's not necessarily to someone who hasn't been to rehab, to someone who hasn't experienced pain, because everyone's obviously experienced that, but it's very hard to articulate to someone who hasn't been on that level of anguish, because a lot of the time I was met with but you're fine. Everything's fine. You've got such a great life. Like, what's the matter? Everything's going to be amazing. Look at what you've got. Be grateful for what you've got. And that's all good and well. And I absolutely, you know, gratitude is a very important part of it. But when you're in that dark place and everything's dark, whatever anyone says and whatever you've got materialistically, friendship-wise, family-wise, it doesn't make a difference. It's got to come from inside you, basically.
It's literally like everything's in black and white. You see no joy in such small things.
Absolutely. And that's really what the painful thing is. I can remember being in these beautiful places and being so low and everyone like, isn't this incredible? And you can't see that, you know, everything is, as you say, you know, everything's just dark. So, yeah.
I find it so inspiring that you are at the other side in terms of you're now helping other people. And I find that very inspiring. I mean, I know, especially with PTSD, because I didn't even know that was a thing for sexual assaults. I thought it was just from being in the army or violent situations. I remember I did a lot of research on it, and the same with depression, because doing the research kind of helped me understand what was going on. And I just find it so amazing that you're at another level.
Well, you say that, but it also really helps me when I listen to my clients. For each session, I'm not thinking about myself, which is actually a relief, because the rest of the time I'm, you know, very self-absorbed. My head's like a washing machine. I get so many thoughts all the time. So when actually, you know, my clients also help me, because it gives perspective, right? I'm just very grateful for the journey, because it's got me to where I feel most like me, and actually being able to celebrate myself and be completely authentic with those who accept me, rather than continually trying to chase a group of people or a certain situation that actually would never make me feel good about myself. So
that's very powerful. It's time for Behind the Post, which is where we will go back and look at recent social media posts and discuss what was actually going on behind the scenes.
So I have your Instagram up here. And for those listening, I have chosen a post where Holly is wearing a sort of skimpy outfit, a yellow cardigan. And it's sort of as if there's like a collage of you. There's sort of three versions of you taking a picture of yourself. You know, I was interested in this because you look amazing, and it's a very cool image. But actually, perhaps, you know, there was something else going on, as you said, behind the scenes.
Yes, there definitely was. This was a trend that was going on at the time. It was more of a collage trend. A lot of people were doing it, and it is quite cool. So I put on a cardigan, which I've seen over Instagram a lot recently, which I love. And I ended up taking these photos in the morning when I had just woken up. So I hadn't eaten anything. I wasn't bloated. My skin was relatively clear. And I felt pretty good about myself, and then made them into a collage, which I said I would never do. Sent them to my sisters and I said, guys, I did it. I've made the collage. And then it sat in my camera roll for a while. And I actually posted it one evening. I had just had a Thai takeaway. I wasn't feeling that great because it was a January evening. It got dark quite early. The weather was bad. I was bloated. My skin wasn't clear. And I always have like a weird expectation. If I post something where I look good on the outside, it will make me feel a lot better on the inside.
Mm-hmm. I've been there. It's a very dangerous game, that one, because we post when we actually don't feel good about ourselves. But the reality is that actually, even if we get the validation that we're seeking, it doesn't actually make us feel good in the long run. You know, it's that look to make ourselves feel better, but actually, sadly, the only person that can do that is ourselves, right?
Definitely. I had that empty feeling. I posted it and I was in the cardigan, which I loved and has been very popular. So I was like, okay, that's going to make me like maybe attract more people. And then it was a collage. So that was like a trend, I guess. So I thought that would get even more people to see it. And I posted it and I was just kind of didn't really know what to do afterwards. I was kind of, I had this expectation that it would go out on Instagram and I was going to feel absolutely fine. Everything was going to be great. The bloat would go away. My skin would clear up. But it didn't.
It never does. Unfortunately, it's one of those things, the amount of times that I've perhaps posted a picture where I then actually feel so much more anxious because I've posted it, because it's not getting the reaction that I was expecting. But it's really interesting because I look at this picture and obviously you look amazing, but there was actually pain going on when you posted it, or perhaps even by the sort of the narrative that was going on whilst even creating it. It was this beating yourself up all the time. Oh, I'm not going to do this. I shouldn't do this. I don't want to be like this.
Yeah.
And then the problem is it's never good enough.
Mm-mm. No. Even looking back, I'm annoyed I posted it, because I mean, I'm trying to make my social media more authentic, because it doesn't help me putting out images that aren't actually real. And it probably doesn't help people who follow me. It probably gives them an unrealistic expectation of what I actually look like, because I do not look like that 95% of the time. And it's scary trying to become more authentic and more real and trying to post what I want to post rather than what I think people want to see.
So, you know, other than obviously trying to make yourself feel better, what was it when you posted that, do you think, that you were looking for? Was there anything in particular you were looking for? You know, was it the likes? Was it comments? Was it, you know, people affirming you? What was it?
I don't know. Mm. I think that's why I didn't feel anything after posting it. I try not to read the comments. And I don't look at who's liked it. I have all those notifications off, because otherwise I will obsess over it. I've done it in the past and it was unhealthy, so I've just had to turn them all off. I'm still trying to figure out what I look for when I post something, because sometimes I'm like, oh, this post hasn't got that many likes as the other one. Why is that? So then I look for reasons why they're not matching up.
Yeah. Oh, that's horrible. And that's that's such a painful place to be, because we make it mean something about ourselves. Mm. I think what I'm trying to do on Instagram is not post when I feel bad about myself, right? So, you know, that is one rule that I'm trying to follow, that when I'm feeling a little bit low, because it just makes me feel even more secure. I've realized it makes me feel even more secure, and I don't have a following like you do. So it's not even the same, but I guess it in some way it is the same, because it's that sort of dopamine hit and it's that looking for external validation to make ourselves feel good, where actually what we should be doing is soothing ourselves, looking after ourselves, being gentle with ourselves, and not giving ourselves another opportunity to beat ourselves up. Because any opportunity to beat myself up, and that's, you know, it's like I've hit the jackpot.
Definitely. I definitely relate to that. I mean, I want to have more fun on Instagram. I mean, Truffle, my puppy, he has an Instagram page that I post, and there is so much joy in posting on his page, because all the accounts that he follows are dogs and all the accounts that follow him are primarily dogs. So the feed is just full of dogs and I just love scrolling on there. So whenever I do need a little bit of joy, I will just go into Truffle's account.
There's so much less pressure.
So much less
Finally,
pressure.
There's less pressure. And it's not about, oh my God, what do they think that I look like? It's because that's, you know, it's stressful.
Yeah.
To say the least.
If he's bloated, no one cares.
Amazing.
Tali, I think this has been the best way I could have seen this first episode going. I've really enjoyed speaking with you and I felt very comfortable.
Well, thank you, Holly, so much for providing me the space as well. And I'm so excited for the journey and the future episodes.
Well, thank you for being so honest and for allowing me the space to be vulnerable with you. I think even though these experiences were negative and formative, I am taking the setbacks into my own hands, taking control of my narrative, and I will be bringing the audience of 21 and Over along with us on the journey.
I'm very excited.
Me too. And thank you very much to our listeners. We want to hear from you. So send us a DM on Instagram at 21 and Over with Holly, or email us at 21andover@studioramsey.com. Subscribe to 21 and Over with Holly Ramsey on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery.
Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.